Equipping Australian schools for the 21st Asian century. That's the theme of a national conference hosted by the Asia Education Foundation, which kicks off this morning. And recently, of course, all eyes have turned to our Asian neighbours, Shanghai, Singapore, Hong Kong, South Korea. Their students are doing a whole lot better than us in international standardised tests for reading, maths and science. In fact, we're slipping backwards. And this, of course, has been the source of considerable debate and angst amongst educators and politicians in Australia. So if this is the Asian century, should we be taking a leaf out of our nearest neighbours' school books? Or does our obsession with testing come at the expense of quality education? My next guest thinks so. He's looked more closely at the data with some conflicting conclusions. Professor Yong Zhao is the Presidential Chair and Associate Dean for Global Education in the College of Education at the University of Oregon. And he joins me now. Welcome, Yong.
Thanks, Natasha.
This focus on student scores in standardised tests and how we compare nationally and internationally, it's become something of an obsession amongst public education systems everywhere. What do you think's wrong with that endeavour?
Well, I think, you know, the big problem is that standardised test only measures your ability to take the tests. The problem can stop at that. It's education should have a broader measures of outcomes like happiness, curiosity, creativity, entrepreneurship. I think this drive to improve test scores may come at a huge cost of other abilities and happiness and generally or engagement in students. So I think this is definitely wrong. It's not going to produce the type of students we will need in the future.
At a huge cost. Let's unravel that a little further. Remind us what the really big international test, student assessment measures, PISA. PISA stands for the Program for International Student Assessment, and these are the major international comparisons that are being made at the moment. What do they tell us?
There's another one too. It's called the TIMSS, Trends in International Mathematics and Science Study. It's also quite big. Actually, it's predated PISA, has a longer history. Mm-hmm. But all of this basic measures, again, in a narrow few subjects, it'll be reading, math, and science, and scores. But at the same time, if you look at most of the measures, it have other kind of questions embedded in them, for example, student confidence, student enjoyment, student interest in their subjects. And across different countries, we see a negative correlation, which means countries with higher test scores average may have a lower confidence and or lower enjoyment and less interest in subjects.
Right, so there's this sort of flip side. High PISA
exactly.
Scores really they don't perform as well on those other measures.
Yeah, not as much interest. Even like Finland was, I think, number one in 2006 in science. But their students' average interest in science were below the OECD average. And the last round of TIMSS that's released in 2012, the data, the trends, again, in trends in international mathematics science study, Korea's math, the eighth grade, was number one, but only about 3% of their students showed any confidence in math.
That's extraordinary. You pull out another measure as well. And that's called GEM, the Global mm-hmm. Entrepreneurship Monitor. Tell us about that measure.
Yeah, that's another annual survey of entrepreneur activities across some, I think, 50 countries. It's about as old as PISA, but has nothing to do with education, but more has to do with economic development. A number of measures, for example, startup companies or perceived entrepreneur capabilities, that is, do people believe they can start businesses? And I correlated that with some of the PISA results, mm-hmm. and again, showed negative correlation. Countries with high scores like Singapore, Japan, Korea have relatively much lower perceived entrepreneur confidence in the sense that the scores may be high, but not many people believe they could start businesses, which I think actually is very necessary in the 21st century.
Are you stretching it, though, to correlate those scores on standardized tests in school with entrepreneurship in adulthood and that sort of sense of confidence in being able to innovate?
I think actually that's a very good point. That is, a lot of times when we look at the data, it's that we are stretching a lot of things. Honestly, when I initially analyzed that data, I did not mean to say, okay, yeah, high scores will cause the drop of your entrepreneur skills. It's not necessarily that so. Mm. But at the same time, you know, look at the people who pay so much attention to the test scores are trying to use the test scores to predict a country's future and a school's future or of a person. Future, I think we all commit the same kind of ecological fallacies. What I would like us to do, that kind of data is to show if you want to treat it seriously, these are some more important factors or important measures, but you show a negative correlation. If we don't pay attention to this, perhaps it's better for us to look for some other measures at this time. So I think that's definitely an issue as well. I think we spend so much time and put so much attention on test scores of a 7-year-old, 10-year-olds like your NAPLAN. I think it's from beyond the point. We should move way beyond that.
Well, they're very popular with politicians in Australia, the UK and America. I mean, this is all about the politics of education too, and those standardised tests appeal because governments have to have some way of measuring outcomes in education. And so that's what those tests have been about, tests like NAPLAN.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, actually this morning before I came here, I was reading a report to the European Union report about how non-cognitive skills are as important, if not more important than cognitive test scores, you know, like about grades, about confidence. So I think in education overall, we have the need as politicians for single measures, easy measures, simplistic measures. We have to be very concerned about the kind of damage it might do to create the kind of education that actually does a disservice to all our children in the future.
Very powerful point you're making. Professor Yong Zhao is my guest this morning. He's speaking at a conference on Asia and education here in Australia. He's the Presidential Chair and Associate Dean for Global Education at the University of Oregon. Professor Zhao, should we dismiss the achievements of countries who have topped those international tests like PISA, Shanghai, Singapore, Hong Kong, Korea? I mean, it could be argued that Australian schools certainly have something to learn from those high-performing schools.
Well, I think there's always something to learn from each other, but I would say, you know, the Asian countries, we should also be very careful, look at what they give up, what they don't have, you know, why the Asian countries or the Asian education system you just named, Shanghai, South Korea, Hong Kong, Singapore, why are they sending a lot of their students to overseas? Why are they also borrowing a lot of westernized educational ideas? What they have sacrificed to achieve those high scores, I think is precisely the lesson we should learn. If we want to learn anything, we should go talk to this country to say, what are they trying to reform themselves and what's their aspiration? I think their aspiration is a much more open educational system. And we, especially now in the 21st century, I think these countries recognize very well that they need more creative entrepreneurial talents, especially like think about China. Shanghai was number one, but China, I would say no, very few Chinese are happy with this education.
Yes, you make the point that China actually hasn't talked up its success on the PISA tests. I mean, what do you think? What have you observed that they lose in their high achievement on these tests, high scoring on these tests?
Well, I think, first of all, they sacrifice a lot of time for children to learn to be socialize, to deal with nature. We always, talk about Chinese students are so immersed in learning, and learning that means the school subject, academics, but they have no time for something else. You know, again, life success is dependent on a lot more variables than just simply taking good tests. So I think the country has recognized they have sacrificed the possibility to be creative, to be entrepreneurial, happy children, engaged students. And also, overall, I have observed children have generally no sense of direction of life after graduation because all these years they have been told just do well on school subjects and they haven't had chance to make mistakes, to find out their own passion, their own interest. So all of those, when put together, is a huge loss and for this tiny little thing called test scores.
Yes, once that framework of education and school drops away, what's left? Is there any evidence, Professor Zhao, that those Asian countries are actually rethinking their high performance on those international test scores, or is the kind of lure of staying at the top of the ladder just too powerful?
Oh, I think there's plenty of evidence for over the last several decades. For example, China, from the Minister of Education to the top leaders, have been calling to transform its called test-oriented education to a quality-oriented education. Quality, then, being the quality of talents. And South Korea, I think their new president just began to institute something called a free semester for children. Singapore has been trying to multiple rounds of reforms. You know, one of them is called, I think, Teach Less and Learn More. They've been trying to reduce a lot more content, even in mathematics. I think Japan had done some similar reforms for all of this past several decades. They've been trying to change a lot.
You believe schools should focus more on the individual strengths of each student rather than trying to slot them into a template of performing on standardized tests. I mean, teachers say that they are already doing this. How should their focus shift, do you think?
Well, I think it's not only schools, but also parents and teachers, and as adults, especially in the 21st century, as I've always, I think, written in many different places, that, I mean, almost every talent has become valuable. Every student comes to school with a strength. You know, my slogan is always this: if Lady Gaga is useful, anyone can be useful. You know, in that sense, that how do we help people to develop strength rather than fix their deficit? I think that's something very important. I don't think schools are doing very well in that regard. Sometimes our teachers may say, okay, yeah, you can have your individualized pathway, but you still arrive at my NAPLAN or my Australian curriculum common goal. That's very different. But I think we should really go back to look at children to say, can we have a personalized pathway for each and every child to pursue their greatness? You know, it's we have passed the time to mass produce a lot of students with similar skills to work on the assembly line. It is time for again, individual talents, individual passion, but you have to become great and to do that.
And that's the dream, isn't it? Professor Yong Zhao, thanks for joining us on Life Matters this morning, and have a great time in Australia.
Thank you very much.
Professor Yong Zhao, he's the Presidential Chair and Associate Dean for Global Education at the University of Oregon in Australia, as part of a conference on boosting Asian studies in Australian schools and much more besides, convened by the Asia Education Foundation. All that information on the Life Matters website. Hey, it's National Science Week. And next on RN, we're celebrating.